All right, everyone, welcome to back to the Anti-Media Radio. My name is Jake Anderson on a sunny afternoon evening here in Portland. And yeah, I don't, I usually like to talk about my mood, but I'm just kind of blah today. I mean, I saw my therapist, but we won't go into that. So yeah, kind of a interesting news week. It's relatively slow. The government's all tied up with healthcare, which is just a complete corporate boondoggle. I mean, that's all that matters right now. And as I was explaining last night on the show with Nick Burnaby, the founder of Anti-Media, and DB, who's going to be joining us here in a minute. I don't even view politicians as people anymore. I really don't. And I've been piecing this together in my head for a long time because I've always wondered, why do politicians just seem different to me? Even ones I like, and there's very few of them, but they seem different to me. It's like the celebrity perversion mixed with religion, mixed with there's some that like the religion of statism mixed with basketball celebrity sports worship. There's something weird going on there, and I think I finally figured it out last night. And basically, we on this show we talk about the term deep state. I think I was actually one of the people that helped get the word out there a lot. An article I did for Anti-Media kind of made it go a little bit viral. But it was already out there. I'm not taking credit for that term or anything, God forbid. But the deep state basically is the idea of this synergy between the government, corporations, defense contractors, and all this. And I tend to think that politicians are just these red blood cells connecting these different entities. The politicians know what kind of legislation the corporations want to get passed in order to make them money. And they also know what kind of kickback they can get from the corporations. For example, David Petraeus, he famous military guy, he got a very high-ranking position at a some kind of firm. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Some firm, but basically, it was a defense contractor firm. In other words, he got hooked up after he retired because he did a bunch of shit that these corporations want. And that happens ad nauseam. That's what our government is people making money by doing legislative favors. And to talk about this with me, as always, I have DB Schwartz on the line. DB, how you doing, man?
Hey, not too bad, man. Just busy. But
Well, you don't have to hang yourself over it, dude.
yeah, exactly. I guess it could be worse, right?
Yeah, it can always be worse. We could always find out the universe is just a meaningless void of atoms, and nothing we do really
Well,
matters. We could always find out.
good things are happening today, Jake. A lot of people are being arrested, and the MSM's not covering it.
Yeah, there are a lot of people being arrested. There's a lot of pedophiles being arrested.
Yep.
There's a lot of there's a I've been watching them.
The dam broke
You
today.
got me looking for that a year, like half a year ago, and sure
Yeah,
enough,
it
it's
just took a
gonna.
long time. They
Yeah.
had to, they, you know what they had to do, Jake? They had to, number one, make sure that Wiener would talk. And number two, now they got this Awan brother guy singing. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz is on a suicide watch for sure.
Yeah, that's not funny, but I'm gonna laugh anyway. Yeah, no, she was. She, I mean, she's a scumbag, and I think most people can understand that she may. I mean, she played a huge role in the downfall of the DNC. And on this topic, of course, we have Hillary Clinton released the name of her book today,
Yeah,
and.
it's a really, I mean, just God, that's as precious as the one by Bush, which was Hard Choices or whatever.
Yeah, it was it
Decision
that
Points.
yeah, Decision Points, which yeah, that was unbelievable. But this one is even crazier. and the anti-media covers it. So the name of the book she released is called What Happened? And it just has been trolled so viciously all day today. But the very best one, as is not surprising to me, was by Glenn Greenwald. And this just, I mean, this is just classic. But, okay, so Hillary Clinton's tweet today was, writing what happened was hard. So is what we see every day. As we move forward and fight back, I hope this helps. And then she has a link to the book. So Glenn Greenwald tweeted back, books that pose a question and then answer it right on the cover. And God, that's good. Because it's just what happened and then Hillary Rodham Clinton. And yeah, it's fun. And then, of course, yeah, the James
Clinton Bush. Clinton Foundation is going to become the ultimate political punching bag for this century. Mark my words, it'll take down many a career and put many a person in prison.
Well, if it clears the way for a better progressive branch of the government, I'm all for it. I'm not holding my breath on that. We're also joined tonight by journalist Claire Bernish. How are you doing tonight, Claire?
I'm sick, but I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yeah,
do sound like Kathleen Turner.
I'm not really sure what to say to that.
Yeah, she warned us she was going to be ornery as hell tonight. So you just stepped in it big time, brother.
No, I mean there's nothing bad about that statement at all.
Well, I agree with that.
In that case, thank you. I guess.
Yeah. Here are some other better names for the book would have been The Killing Fields. DNC cheated for me. Okay, that's just stupid. I haven't really seen another good one. What happened? 82 corporations that paid for Hillary Clinton speeches have actively sought to... What? All right. There's a lot of... trolling is a really hit-or-miss game. And... all right, well, we're going to move on here. But, I guess kind of a slow week in the news cycle, which is why it's always good to have Claire on for a week like this, because I've been caught up in my own stuff. I was filming all weekend, and then I pretty much slept all day Monday and really Tuesday, too. But, from what I can see is the government is just once again quagmired in just this bullshit legislative process that's not really going to help anyone. I mean, I think a lot of people don't want the repeal to pass because people don't want to lose their health care, but that's just people that got health care through Obamacare. So, I mean, I don't really think that, it's not really affecting the majority of Americans, really. What else is going on? Claire, I know you had some talking points on your mind here.
For one thing, I would say that my favorite better Hillary book title was How to Steal an Election and Still Lose. I thought that was...
Yeah,
that's that's my favorite one that I've seen so far, but there have been a few good ones. I've been kind of out of the loop on the news this week, too, because I have been rather sick. And because I've been sick, I've also been suffering from rather severe writer's block, which hasn't been fun. But then... feeling sick again today, I started looking around social media some more, and I realized that part of the problem, and maybe even why I've been so sick, is all the vitriol and all the arguing and name calling and blaming and everybody pointing fingers at everybody else, whether in the government, from the government to the people to the government, people to each other. I mean, it's like everybody is to blame, but nobody's willing to take responsibility for anything that's wrong right now. And, we're entering another week where it's either a slow news cycle or a fast one, depending on who you ask. And it's more of the same of everything. More ridiculous policy changes by a government that only, theoretically half the people want, which would be the same with any administration. More things that nobody wants, done by people that nobody wanted there, doing them to people who don't want to be ruled by anybody. And yet we're all arguing amongst ourselves about what nationality somebody was, what religion they were when, they did X and X crime or whatever. It's just so tiresome. When you see the majority of the activist community sort of I guess, uniting along this really tragic front of giving up, basically, on everybody, because the vitriol is so acerbic, it's almost impossible to have a conversation anywhere, even in person, with people. And when you see activists starting to wonder if it's even worth, you know, their time to keep going, that's a bad sign. And it's, and this is my rant, of course, but I think that it's worth noting once again that, you know, it doesn't really matter who you align with or what your personal politics are, you know, what you want for the future, you know, if there's an apocalypse coming or not. It, none of that really matters. What really matters most right now is that we are being pitted against each other by a state whose only goal is control, and it is falling apart before our eyes. This government, this empire, is crumbling into a million ugly little pieces. And meanwhile, we're kind of arguing amongst ourselves who's going to take control of the oars when the whole ship is sinking. And that makes no sense. It's, you know, we're not going to get anywhere. The only way that we're going to get anywhere is if we stop consenting to being governed. You know, we stop consenting with laws that are bad, where, you know, people who are on juries, if there is a bad law, they nullify it. Look up jury nullification. You know, you stop civil disobedience. You stop doing the things the government wants you to. We don't have to have a violent revolution and try to somehow outman and outgun the world's largest military by orders of magnitude. I mean, that's not necessary. All that's necessary is that we stop giving the people in power their power. We stop giving them our money. We stop giving them our time. We stop giving them our attention. And most of all, we stop giving them our control. And that's the only way we're going to get this back. But the more we argue amongst ourselves and we sound like little quibbling children, and it's ridiculous, but the more that we do that, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to go down with the ship instead of working together to build a life raft, even if we don't necessarily like the person sitting next to us. It doesn't matter. We can still do it. This is the time to do it, too. But if we don't do it soon, it's going to be too late, because the empire is going to fall apart and everything's going to be a mess. And there is going to be no cohesion and no semblance of anything positive for the future. I know that sounds kind of, you know, black and bleak and dark and all that, but, you know,
it's seriously actually the most optimistic thing I've heard.
You're telling me you want to buy some land then, and we need to get this farm going, right?
That's always been in the plans.
I mean, seriously, I can do it. It can be done, and it can be done if, like, we only need, what, maybe like 40 people. Seriously, like, we just get it done.
I've already told Nick I'm down. I've already told everyone I'm down. Just give me
a lot of people like want to leave the country, but I mean, you can put up a nice fight here and grow a lot of food.
Give me the papers. I won't even read it. I'll sign it without even reading it, DV.
See, that's the thing, though. We keep, you know, I know that a lot of people have talked about emigrating outside the U.S., and that makes sense. I've talked about it myself, and I'm still certainly considering it. But if the people of the world sort of at once realize that governments do not have the people's wishes in mind ever, 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 ever. Governments are by their very nature self-interested. They're only interested in perpetuating their own existence. And without our consent to have that government, they fall apart. They can't do anything. If nobody votes, if nobody like follows their rules, if nobody does any of that stuff that they want us to do, then they go away. It really is that simple. I know that at first it would not be that simple, and I realize that it is not going to be pretty. I understand that, but it does not take, my point is that it does not take violent revolution, and it certainly doesn't take us all coming together on the same page.
I'd rather it not be violent revolution, and I have to say that, you know, from the Latin root of the word itself of government, it is just mind control for the masses, for the elite's benefit. That's what it's always been.
So inevitably, I mean, the question that comes up to me is if there, you know, ideally there'd be some kind of vast awakening and everyone would relinquish government at once. But realistically, that's probably not going to happen. So as governments drop out one at a time, you're going to have a power vacuum and other governments are going to swoop in and seize control over those governments. So is it really realistic to think that every government is going to be dissolved, or do you think maybe there's a way that we can work with government? Is that not possible?
I think by its nature, you cannot work with government. And we have seen that. I mean, even within this really screwed up framework that we have in that was supposed to be constitutional republic, you know, we don't really have any sort of means of actually governing ourselves. I mean, we have money so infused in the government and everything. We don't have a voice at all. There is no government by the people. And part of that is size. You can't have any sort of territory with a large size without having the inevitable police force and military and a government that has to be removed from the people in some sort of way just because of representation. I mean, government is never going to have the interests of the people in mind. Even the people who have, you know, there are many well-intentioned people in Congress and wherever. I'm not saying that they aren't that way. I think that many of them started that way, at least. But the reality is this, the system in general, the system of government in general is broken. We're not people living a life anymore. We're kind of existing inside the framework of what has been laid out for us. And it's when we're cooperative. And, you know, if you look to smaller communities, you can even see how that works. Smaller communities come together without, you know, asking for aid unless they absolutely have to. They do things for each other. It's kind of, you know, I know that that's quaint and it's not that way everywhere. I'm not that idealistic or idiotic either. But the point is that in many places that are surprising, people are making things work. For instance, a number of communities have essentially abolished their police. They no longer call police because they've worked a framework where they have conflict resolution. They have, you know, varying degrees of community service and different systems set up in these communities to replace the police. And you know what? People stopped dying. People stopped going to prison. They didn't need to. Only for the very, very serious violent crimes do these people actually have to get authorities involved. And it works. It works to solve the problems. I saw something today that explained very handily that the reason that government really doesn't do anything for the people is because it wasn't designed that way. You're not going to ever find your answer in somebody else. It's a cohesion sort of thing with people working together. You don't have to have wealth distribution and you don't have to have a framework governing over you. It's just sort of cooperation. I mean, imagine if, you know, you went to your neighbor and just, you know, you agreed to have lemonade in one of your front yards or something like that, and you don't have to get a permit and you don't have to worry about being fined $200. I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I know that I'm ranting. It's just, I'm so fed up with all of this division and
sorry.
You know, it's insane.
You know, the point about police actually brings me to an article I saw today. It's actually by the Anti-Media. And DB, this is in your neck of the woods. So a Minneapolis mayoral candidate wants to strip the police of their guns. I don't even.
Yeah, he's got no chance in hell because the people don't want that. What the people want is higher standards, and they want accountability. And the union's fighting that tooth and nail, and of course they are, because once that shroud of secrecy is gone, the union loses its power, and it's just politics again, and it's political casualties like this lady and like Castile, man, and these people just keep getting away with it and blasting people up here. And the thing that's really different up here than other places is we have tons of people that are armed. And, I mean, I can just see something happening where a cop unloads on someone and the person next to him in the car is armed and they just fire back on them. I mean, I can see it happening soon.
I think that's probably, you know, where we're – I think straight up violence in the street is probably inevitable at this point because I don't see – I mean – I love a lot of what Claire said, and I think a lot of it is possible at some point. I'm one of these people that I think it'll probably take a little bit longer than
Jake, I got to ask you a question because I thought of it myself. If you're riding if you're riding in a car with somebody that you love and the police gun them down and you're locked and loaded next in the seat next to them, I mean, there's no jury that would convict you of anything except self-defense if you fired back on both of them. Him and a partner. And, you know, Yanez is very lucky Diamond was not armed because legally, if she had been a CCW carrier, she could have fired back on both of them in self-defense. So that's the scenario I see happening. It'd be ironic if Minneapolis became the point of the spear, but something's brewing here.
It'd be ironic if gun rights proponents ended up winning simply because of how corrupt the police are. That would be the irony. Is if everyone
didn't deserve it at all. Two people that were like the worst people they could have shot, one after another, and people are tired of it. BLM was getting a lot of flack, and now because they marched for anybody, they'll march for anyone that's gunned down by the cops, and now they've shown that they're actually like very, very much so a proponent of the community. They're not, I mean, if Soros was paying them before, it's not happening anymore. They're like, they're their own thing now.
So I kind of feel like the fight against the police, and this goes to Claire's point in a way, I kind of feel like this is an inflection point because there's so many issues here to disentangle. It's virtually impossible to come up with a comprehensive strategy to deal with all of them. But one of them is battling the police state. And I feel like a mobilization against the police that won would be a crucial setback against the state. And I feel like that's almost a worthwhile cause right now to show that we will band together and we will not tolerate this anymore. I don't know if that's possible, but I do think that would be a huge blow to the police, military, industrial state, is if we basically force the police to not disarm, but there's got to be some prosecutions. There's got to be some cops that go to prison for this shit. And that would be a chilling effect, and I think it would stop cops from just shooting blankly, you know? If they knew that they could go to prison for it,
But that's not going to happen. You know that's not going to happen. The only way to actually change the police force, to actually reform policing in this country, is to change the way that we train police. And currently we train, I believe it's 95% to 97% of the police forces in this country train militarily, like exactly as the military does,
boot camp
style and everything. In the U.S., some in Israel, some in the U.S.
Yeah, some in Israel, some in the U.S. doing the training.
But the point is, we are training them like the military to treat the citizens like targets, like the enemy. So what
like
do you expect is going to happen? But they've known that this is a problem since I think it was the 90s that is the paper I always refer to. They've known this is a problem. They know that actual classroom teaching and not this warrior cop style training is actually better, produces more effective results, better crime solving, better crime fighting, and better relations with the community, but they don't do it. They don't do it for a reason. When they know that they can do better, they're not doing it for a reason. That's why reform doesn't work.
I was just
going to ask Claire if she just on the off chance researched maybe in the last decade, if a lot of these cops seem just to me as if they're 5 years or less on the force. Like the training's dramatically changed very recently.
The training has changed in the past, like I would say 10 years, and the hiring protocols have changed dramatically. They've actually put an IQ cap. I can't remember if that's nationwide or what, but there's an IQ cap for recruits. Some departments have lowered standards in allowing prior drug offenders to apply for the force. Some now allow like programs where they can kind of graduate from high school without an actual diploma and go straight to the force. I mean, there are a number of ways they are doing anything to recruit anybody, and they are not doing proper psychological evaluations. And like I said, they're not doing training properly. So what do you expect? That and with the Reagan era, I think it was Reagan era, letting loose of all, or like shutting down of all the state mental hospitals means that there are a lot more homeless individuals on the street who have psychological and psychiatric issues. Now the police don't get any training in that for the most part. And so we have two crises meeting at the same time, plus the militarization of police. I mean, I guess it baffles me to think that people imagine some sort of reform being possible when the police are killing people with impunity for literally no reason, and they aren't being punished. And people still believe that reforming policing is going to do something somehow.
But didn't you just say you wanted reform?
I'm saying for the people who want reform, that's what needs to be done. No. If you really want to reform it, if you actually want to attempt to reform, that is just about the only way to do it. The second way would be to actually make police have liability insurance so that the taxpayer isn't paying out the damn payment when they wrongfully kill somebody. That would make a huge difference. If it comes from the officer, if it punishes the officer and he has to pay for it somehow through insurance, or his department does, but not the taxpayer, then that would make a difference too, if you're going to reform. But like I said, I don't see how any of that's going to happen, one, or how it's going to do anything, two, at this point, when literally no cop is being held responsible for killing anybody.
Right. So, as usual, we're left back with this tough decision. Well, not decision. It's we're left back in this position of no option really seeming like it would have a total effect on anything. Which is problematic, because it means there's no solution. And when there's no solution, chaos reigns. And that's what we're seeing right now, I think. One thing I'd like to see, I'd really like to see some seasteads get, I'd like to see some new sovereign territories exploring different economic models get going. I know the seastead movement was something I was interested in it for a brief period of time. I don't doubt the government would try to end up enforcing regulations on them. But, you know, it would be interesting to see some different economic models, some different policing models, just to have something we can point to say this works, this doesn't work, and stuff like that. Because right now all we've got are these just, you know, very disparate case studies of like, I know I saw one, I'd have to find it. It was one of those attention videos. There was basically a community where they adopted some European model of police enforcing. And it seems to be cutting down dramatically on police shootings. And I know there are some communities that the police forces that are actually really trying to change, but that's, you know, they're dropping in the barrel here. Especially when you come to big cities, like Chicago, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, New York, where the fraternity of the police, they're dead set against any kind of reform because it forces them to relinquish power. And with Trump in office, Trump is dead set. He's voiced his support of the police many, many times. He's voiced his disapport of Black Lives Matter many, many times. I mean, we're just waiting for the spark to set off the fire here in the next phase of police battles here, I think. And it's a scary situation, I think, because all it would take, like DB said, is a couple of scenarios going down to cause just outright chaos in a city. It could shut down a city and they would go into martial law. And then you have the state really cracking down. Then you have the state really showing their force, and then you have these fake narratives that will come out through mainstream media of why the police needed to do certain things, and that's what the mainstream media is best for, is manufacturing consent around stupid government and police policies. And that's
like buying it anymore up here. It's really strange. Like, it's really
They're not buying it anywhere, but yet it's not manufactured consent anymore. They don't need our consent. They're just doing it anyway.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is the point where we have to make police understand, too. This is the tipping point. If there are any police officers out there who are somewhat doubting, you know, how much control it is that they have over people, this would be the time they should question that, because very shortly, I can almost guarantee, just by looking at the atmosphere in this country, there are going to be really bad repercussions for police in general. I don't think people are... You know, we saw ambushes in Dallas and a couple other places before. I think it's going to get a lot worse. And that's just by, you know, just the law of physics. I mean,
I agree with you. Yeah.
You can't have police in a uniform. That's a symbol. It doesn't really matter what department it is. People are resentful, and rightly so. And, you know, while it might not be the police officer's individual fault, the training that they received, they are seen as a symbol of that oppression and that, you know, murderous impunity that they all seem to have. And people are furious. And it would behoove officers to even implore their, you know, commanding officers to change training or try to, I don't know, whatever it takes. This is the point, though. It just, everything seems to be going south very quickly now, with the government and the police violence and, you know, the opioid epidemic and the drug war. And it's, everything seems to be coming to a head.
Yeah, I agree with you. I rewatched The Road last night, and I remember it's the third time I've seen it. The second time I saw it, it made me uneasy again. But I posted The Road. It actually makes me relaxed now, and it really did. I wasn't really being just facetious. I mean, obviously I was joking, but there was something kind of quaint about just wandering through this bleak countryside with your son and teaching him lessons and carry the fire and everything. Like it kind of felt like there was more meaning to that existence than what I'm experiencing in this, you know, meat grinder of a culture I live in. And, you know, I really was only being halfway kidding, which is the Road is kind of relaxing right now. I recommend people rewatch it and, you know, think about, you know, what it's going to be like when it's just, I mean, we don't want roving bands of cannibals, but, I mean, how much, for some communities at least, I don't think roving bands of cannibals would be that much worse than what a lot of people of color put up with on an everyday basis when they walk down the street. Maybe that's an extreme statement, but I think...
Maybe that might be better, because at least you can shoot those zombies, right?
Well, I meant just straight up people, just straight up cannibals, not zombies.
Well, you can shoot them too, but you can't shoot clowns in uniforms yet.
No, you can't. But
there just hasn't been that perfect situation yet. I hate to say things like this because I know that a good portion of them are or were people that got into the job. I would hope to at least think they were doing the right thing, but. You know, the crown is displeased right now with our colonies.
Yeah, boy, what an absolute! We're in a pickle. We're in a pickle.
Well, police need to decide. Police need to decide if they're loyal to us or the crown.
Everyone needs to decide at this point. We're getting toward the end there. I did write something on abolishing the police that I feel like people should maybe check out on my site, claireburnish.com. I keep sharing it over and over again because I approached the topic of abolishing the police with an open mind and was curious what I would find. And I didn't think that I'd find much evidence to back up my case because I don't believe in police as an entity, but I actually did find things to back up my case. There are a number of examples all over the country. And in fact, I wrote this about a year ago, and there are a number of examples since then. I'm thinking of updating the article. But people who kind of say abolish police, like how you must be crazy. But there's actually very serious, good quality evidence that suggests it's a great idea.
I mean, please feel free to tell more. Otherwise, we can just refer people to the site. But yeah. Claire has her own site that she's put up that is just full of just jaw-dropping, pistol-whipping articles on every subject you can imagine. And I say pistol-whipping lightly because I don't want to give police any ideas. But, yeah, great content on there, Claire. So what was the title of this article so people can search for it?
Thank you. And I was just looking for it. Yeah. It's How to End Their Murderous Impunity, Abolish the Police Entirely. Like I was discussing before, there are communities, like urban communities in particular, there are a couple of examples where the people living there were just tired of police coming through and harassing them constantly. And it wasn't a very large neighborhood, you know, inner city, but it was good enough in size that it made sense. You know, they were just tired of it. The police would come through and like harass the kids who were just out playing when it was hot and stuff like that, and they were done. And they kind of had a meeting, like a community meeting, and decided that they would basically stop calling the police unless, you know, there's some crazy person in the neighborhood or whatever. They would just stop calling the police unless they absolutely had to, and they were going to rely on each other, and they would set up a system. And they set up a system, you know, they had people in charge of conflict resolution. For instance, somebody got caught stealing something from a business. Rather than calling the police, they figured out who had taken the item and brought him back to the store owner, and they talked face-to-face with the person, you know, the mediator there, and decided that the kid would work in the store to pay off the amount that the item would have cost. And he did so in good faith and actually liked working there so much, he ended up working there for a very long time and completely changed his course in life. I mean, I know that's a golden, shiny sort of example, but there are plenty of examples kind of like that, that show that it's community working together when necessary that can solve all the problems that people think government has to. It's kind of, it's a semblance of government when you have a community organizing and doing things together, but it is not a strict government, like where the police can kill you because you didn't have the right license plate tag.
Right. And I think you see that, we see that, I think, in its possibly most idealized state after a national emergency, when it's the local communities that are actually the ones that take control, not FEMA, not any kind of federal agency, but it's the local community teaming up to take, to reclaim their town. I think is when a lot of people feel most American, almost, is when we see what can happen on the local level. Maybe I'm aggrandizing a natural disaster too much, but
no. I mean, there is something about that. When people are working together on their own, there is a good sense. You get to know people better and you have more of a reason to talk to them in the street when you see them, instead of in a lot of places where you just pass by people you see every day and never even know their name or anything. I mean,
yeah,
there's a good reason in terms of security also to know your neighbors and to be, you know, close with them to a certain extent, you know. I don't know. It just, I'm very irritated this week, and I know that's coming across, but I have...
Oh, you're making sense.
I've really had it with people being divisive for no reason and over the most petty things.
Well,
you know,
you do stir the honey pot. I mean,
I know I'm irascible, and I understand I'm divisive myself, but my goals are that, I mean, I'm not out there just yelling at people or, you know, ad hominem attacks and all this kind of bullshit that I saw this week. What I've seen is just, it's just made me lose quite a big chunk of hope. And that made me angry. That's where I am now. And I what infuriates me most is seeing so many activists that I had respect for so long devolve into this kind of hate-filled sanctimony, and I'm seeing it more and more, and I understand that division is the propaganda of the day, but it's very sad that we're not able to overcome that and, you know, kind of see past division where we should be seeing, you know, whatever small thread might be in common.
Do you feel like being more specific about the divisions within the activist community?
This is such a fraught topic, but I'm loosely talking about the sort of division where it seemed out of the blue in the anarchist community an alt-right faction sort of developed and cleaved off. And it was rather shocking because there were a number of people, I think, and I don't name names because that's, you know.
Right.
But there were a number of people that surprised a number of other people coming out saying xenophobic and hate-filled statements. We've had enough instances recently. You know, you have this Somali Muslim immigrant cop who shot an Australian immigrant white woman. We have the transgender coming ban in the military. That's just, I just can't even start anymore. I'm so angry about everything that's going on. There are enough reasons to divide. Everything seems to be divided along some sort of group, race, class, or some other division. It's almost like it's on purpose, and because it is like that, everybody is pitted against one another. Like, well, that religion sucks. Well, that religion sucks. No, every religion sucks. How about nobody talk about religion because it doesn't matter? It's not coming into play, you know. How about nobody talk about race except for the fact that there is a great deal of racism still existing in this country? Just recognize it. You don't have to agree that it's there. Just recognize that people are experiencing it and move on. And let's work together to do something about the racist policing in the country and the system. I mean, I guess what irks me the most is, why can't people just agree to disagree and move on from there. Like, not everything is a life or death situation just because you have different politics. Right. And that's, I mean, that is what I think propaganda has most successfully done over the last 20 years, is instill the fact that it's right or wrong, and that is it, and it's black or white, and that is it. And there, and if you have that difference, if you're standing in direct opposition to somebody, then you cannot associate with them. I mean, yeah, propaganda has done amazingly well at instilling that in us, and it's totally false.
It's classic divide and conquer, and it actually Claire, this is actually something I think about a lot, because it truly boggles my mind the kind of hate we're seeing between even friends on Facebook and social media. And it does speak to a certain stigmatization that's gone on. People are triggered, and you know, we can get into any number of conspiracy theories on whether this is a totalitarian strategy or not. But I was reading a passage by a social philosopher, Terence McKenna, who I'm a big fan of. He was also a something of a psychonaut. He explored a lot with psychedelics, and he recommended widespread use of psychedelics. And I do want to read, there's a couple passages that I think are interesting. It's about culture. And when we think of culture, we think of a positive thing. But culture really is hard to define. And a lot of times I think culture ends up being appropriated by the power structures at hand, government, corporations, whatnot. So I'm going to read a couple paragraphs from this Terence McKenna speech. So he says, what civilization is 6 billion people trying to make themselves happy by standing on each other's shoulders and kicking each other's teeth in. It's not a pleasant situation. And yet you can stand back and you can look at this planet and see that we have the money, the power, the medical understanding, the scientific know-how, the love, and the community to produce a kind of human paradise. But we are led by the least among us, the least intelligent, the least noble, the least visionary. We are led by the least among us, and we do not fight back against the dehumanizing values that are handed down as control icons. Now, there's more that goes on, but I frankly am out of breath and don't feel like reading anymore. But essentially, it goes into consumerism and cults and religion and Hollywood, Madison Avenue, all those kinds of things. But he makes a point that I don't think is made very often, which is that culture is a widespread cell. We get a lot of smaller cells throughout the day. We get a cell of a product. We get the cell of a religion. We get the cell of a TV program or an ideology. But culture is a wholesale sale of an entire ideology. And you get to the point with divide and conquer, which is that even if you agree with other pieces that other people believe in, if someone offends even the slightest meme of this culture that you're a part of, you react violently. And I think that's what's going on right now, is I think this is the death of the
meme West. Triggered.
I think we may be seeing an early, not early, maybe a medium stage sign.
Triggered.
Of the death of Western culture, which is that people that are triggered cannot see rationally. And this also ties in with the backfire effect, which is a psychological phenomenon of when you present people with information that goes against their held beliefs, they react the same way in a physical way as the fight or flight response. So people actually, when they this violence we're seeing online, on Facebook comments, on retweet, on tweets and stuff like that, these are physical responses. The people aren't thinking.
And they're
this.
So lame, because if yeah. any of these trolls on the internet in real life were just to meet the people that they suppose they spout so much hate for on a personal level and realize they're just human beings, it would just all melt away.
Some of the things that have been said to me online, you know, and in comments on articles, I would dare people, I would pay them to say that to my face just to see if they could do it, because I don't think any of them could. I really do not. I have seen some and my friends have too. I mean, people are really hideous online. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, that's the screen affords people that whole, like, kind of pretend facade like people, like they're not really people, so they can get away with whatever they want to, and it's horrible.
It is, and I know that, I mean, you get a lot of it because you really go out there with your beliefs, and actually, I deign to call them even beliefs. I mean, you do painstaking research on your reports, and you also don't make them ad hominem, usually, from what I've seen. You're usually making an ideological point. So the challenge to the person reading it is to, if they disagree, make an ideological retort. Don't just say someone's a fucking idiot, you know? Like, that's not an intellectual response, you know?
Yeah, but that's what I get. That's what you get.
Yeah, like, and probably a lot.
I get a lot of use smaller words, and you're a horrible writer. And then it gets way far, far worse from there. It's really stunning what people have the nerve to say to people, you know, whatever their profession, when they're behind a screen. I don't know. You have to wonder, put all these people in a room together, they'll either kill each other or be too embarrassed to say a word.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be probably, who knows? That would be an interesting, like, kind of found footage movie concept of get some of these people in the room who have said some of these, get some of the worst trolls in the world together in a room for like 48 hours.
I want to lock Bob Costas and Marv Albert in a closet for 24 hours and film.
Dude, what is your Bob Costas kick tonight, dude?
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
They're just the worst possible people, and yeah, I want to hear him do commentary about each other in a dark closet all night.
You are the only one who wants to hear that, DB.
That would be a huge hit pay-per-view.
That would be massive. Yeah, I mean, that's the future of reality TV. I mean, that's Idiocracy right there. That's what we're headed towards, is put trolls in the room.
We're already there. Oh, my gosh. We have Kid Rock and The Rock and running.
Yesterday, someone at Costco said they loved me. I mean, I was like, what the hell?
There's no hope.
What? Who said what?
Just some huge guy at the entrance. He's like, I love you. Welcome to Costco.
Remember those scientists who said we were living in, what was that, some sort of fabricated reality or something?
And yes, the simulation argument. I've been writing it.
Yeah, well, that's what this is beginning to feel like.
Yeah,
we shift into a quantum leap when we went into the Trump won the election timeline?
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like that someone, whoever is running the simulation, just took a bunch of Adderall and like alcohol?
Yes.
They're
yes.
all quick. Reverse engineer the Simpsons.
No, they have to make it. they have to make the simulation interesting, or it's a future government agency. And if the simulation isn't interesting, it gets discontinued. So they have to keep making the simulation more and more interesting. So,
well, your model has certainly gotten many upgrades, Jake. You're great.
Oh, thank you. I love you. Welcome to Costco. Simulation, just a quick last final point on the simulation theory, because I wrote about this. Apparently, there's virtually no details on it, but apparently there's a couple of tech billionaires that are actually working to try and break us out of the simulation. That's what Silicon Valley has resorted to. They're going to break us out of the simulation.
That in itself seems like something out of the simulation.
That seems awful.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever.
See, but that's the thing. I mean, how else, when you're looking at everything that's going on and how absurdist it is and how things are so contrary and contradictory, and the fact that we have a damn talk show host as president. It has to be a simulation. It's like, please let it be a simulation. Please let those guys in Silicon Valley be right.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, it's just people. Jerry Springer actually had one of the best metaphors for how this happened. What happened, which is, he said that, basically, if your TV starts getting enough static, if your TV and your antenna reception starts screwing up enough, you walk up to the TV and you start smacking it with your hand. And you don't give a shit how much you're damaging the television. You'd rather damage the television just to get it to sit still for a second. And for a lot of people, that's what Donald Trump was, is they wanted to break out of the noise of Washington, and they wanted someone just to speak clearly to them. Now, clearly to me does not mean Islamophobia or homophobia or any of those things. I'm not a Trump supporter, of course, but I thought that was an interesting metaphor because he did come along at a time when people are at their absolute wits' end with politicians. And here you have a reality TV star who is just, quote-unquote, telling it like it is. And, you know, who knows what's going to come next? We are in a new era now. We are in a new era. Anyone can become president. If you tap into the right message and you get enough bigots on your side, if you get enough status on your side, no matter what you're – if you get enough anarchy, who knows what could happen in the future? I mean – We could see Rand Paul as president. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen?
Hey, for the first time in a long time, Chicago's having a baby boom because the Cubs won.
Yeah, 9 months after the World Series, there's going to be all the hospitals will be filled.
Well, it's a good thing.
Because they all had sex, they all had drunk sex the night of the World Series. You see where I'm going with that? Yeah. All right. All right. What
There's going to be a lot of Kerry Woods born.
So Julian Assange actually had just rapid fire tweets in response to the What Happened hashtag, and they actually posted a book, How I Lost by Hillary Clinton, and it shows her with a huge Goldman Sachs sign behind her. And then it says, with a foreword by Julian Assange. Okay. And then the better ones, Julian Assange, it takes a Haitian village, how I funded my election campaign. That was supposed to be a better name.
God. For
Julian Assange, Pride, Prejudice, and Perjury, better names for Hillary's book. And possibly the better one, Pied Piper, my genius strategy to elect Donald Trump. And, of course, that ties back into the revelations by WikiLeaks that early Democratic strategies actually wanted to help Trump win the GOP because they thought he would be an easier win in the general election. And we all know how that worked out. Funny stuff. Good Lord.
Don't forget, I have one here, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It takes a Haitian village to pay for Chelsea's wedding.
I found one more, too. It's by Julian Assange. I came, I saw, I died. The drone joke's on me. I fought the WikiLeaks, and the WikiLeaks won. That was like 3-1 there. But he was obviously having a lot of fun. But he really hates Hillary Clinton. I mean, he hasn't come out with one. And look, I'm fine with it right now because, look, they might not have had the information, but a year from now, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, they better have some goddamn leaks on Donald Trump. They open governments. Don't tell me there's nothing corrupt going on with Donald Trump. That's bullshit. There's all kinds of corrupt shit going on with them. So a year from now, I'm the biggest WikiLeaks supporter you'll ever find. I have a hat that says I'm with WikiLeaks. But if they don't start producing some shit on Donald Trump soon, I'm gonna start getting a little bit pissed off.
What the hell are they gonna produce except that he's just a corrupt businessman?
He's president now.
He's president now, but I think you should be looking to Pence. We want papers on Pence.
Yeah, Pence is way more corrupt than Trump.
Yes, he is, and he's also way more of a threat, and very much, in my opinion, the next phase of Christian.
Pence wrote this legislation to ban transsexual soldiers. Pence did that.
He is a nightmare.
And that's a total, total diversionary tactic to distract people from the healthcare debacle. It probably won't pass. Mattis is literally on vacation right now. The military, the Pentagon doesn't.
Well, they already said they're not going to stop recruiting. So, yeah. I mean, so
they,
what?
They don't know what to do. This is the definition of an inept president. He issues an order, and the government doesn't even know whether to support it or not.
Well, I don't think he did. I honestly think he signed it, and Pence wrote it up, and now it's going to make Pence look like an idiot. And maybe
he tweeted it. He fucking tweeted it. He's president.
I know he did.
You better know what the shit you're talking about.
I know, but still, if Pence wrote the actual legislation, it's going to be a pie in his face.
Well, I mean, Yeah, Pence is a what a piece of horseshit. God.
I thought when Trump, you know, was running that he could care less. So I really truly believe it was Pence that wrote it up.
Yeah, I don't think Trump cares.
Pence is notorious for that. He's an evangelical Christian, but even more conservative than that. And anybody who wants to dive into conspiracy theories can look up Quiverful with Pence.
Oh, God.
Quiverful?
Quiverful. Oh. I have a lisp. Sorry.
Is this somehow going to be related to Christian children's go-away camps? Might be.
Nah, well, I'm just saying... There is a theory out there, and it has to do with Quiverful, and it has to do with Pence. And I think people need to start assessing Pence now and understand what a threat he is to just about everything.
So Sessions is going to be found to be clean, but just a doof. But like Priebus and Pence are possibly going to be gone soon, I think.
Yeah, I mean. I don't think they'll get rid of Sessions because the Senate has basically already came out and said they'll go to war with Trump if he does that, because it makes him look bad. It makes it look authoritarian as hell. It'll be like too many firings, and obviously he's wanting to bring in an attorney general that will fire Mueller, and it's just going to look too
it's just way too obvious to be.
It's way too obvious, yeah. And it's like, you know, God, Trump, if you have nothing to hide, and you probably don't, I mean, maybe you do, I don't know. I kind of feel like with the entire apparatus of the deep state working against you, they probably would have found something more than CIA planted code from Russia, planted from the Vault 7, which they already said they know how to do, and they've already said that the code from Russia looks incredibly suspicious, and it looks like it was just planted there. You know, why would you be trying to cover up the investigation if you have nothing to hide? That's all right. Well, we'll end with that question. Claire, thank you so much for joining us.
Remember to go to ClaireBurnish.com.
Yeah.
Got to say, everybody, ClaireBurnish.com.
Yeah, do that. Good night, everyone. Blow through the stereo, I'ma let him know, no, through the stereo, yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, this is live through the stereo, go and let it blow through the stereo, I'ma let him know, no, through the stereo, yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.